From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, November 4th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Monday, let's do the Monday march back to work real quick here and get it over with. What do you say? Stiffen the backbone. Hold your shoulders back. Put a smile on your face and a prayer on your lips, and you're going to be just fine, okay? All righty. Let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. I like this. It says the hardness of the butter is proportional to the softness of the bread. Which, of course, is why the microwave oven was invented.
And now for something completely different.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big broadcast.
Twisted History.
Oh, boy.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
This is big.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Yeah.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Really?
You might be quizzed.
Oh, stop. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1922 in Egypt. British archaeologist Howard Carter and his men found the entrance to Tutankhamun's tomb in the Valley of the Kings. And within a few years, he and every one of his team members died under mysterious circumstances. Ooh. Some people believing that there was some kind of curse involved for having invaded the tomb. Some people to this day still believe that. And they may be right, I don't know. I wasn't there. Perhaps I was old enough to have been there, but I wasn't there. And it was on this day in 1952, the United States government established the National Security Agency, or the NSA. And they did this because they had the authority to do so, which is why we're all being watched. Remember, question authorities. And soon, the authorities will question you.
I request the cone of silence.
There aren't a lot of people in the world who, when they speak, I stop and listen. No matter where I am, what I'm doing. And if I don't have the time for some reason not to listen, I'll record it and listen to it later. And that is Jordan Peterson. Probably one of the most brilliant people in modern times. I mean, by that, very few people more brilliant than Jordan Peterson have come before him, and I doubt that many will come after his lifetime. The man is that brilliant. And I managed to find this beautiful piece on, I think it was YouTube. I want you just to listen to this. This is Jordan Peterson speaking of Tulsi Gabbard.
The last time I saw Tulsi Gabbard was in D.C., during a discussion hosted in this strangest of all possible worlds by Russell Brand. I had spoken with her at length, as in the case of Kennedy, on my podcast, although only once. What is Lieutenant Colonel Gabbard like on the personality side? Moderately extroverted, higher in assertiveness than enthusiasm. She is no giggling girl. Perhaps her military experience mitigated against taking that sometimes charming, but often too easy route. Markedly low in neuroticism, as befits a woman who pursued a true military career. Agreeableness? Ms. Gabbard cares genuinely about those she served and continues to serve, although I would say she does so in the temperamentally conservative manner that is part patriotism and part respect for the intrinsic dignity and worth of every person, rather than in the oft-cloying, false, and morally self-righteous manner that so often characterizes the so-called allies of the oppressed. On the side of the progressive left, she's also very smart, without the more showy brilliance of Ramaswamy, who we still have to discuss, down to earth in that intelligence, and is as conscientious as you would hope an ex-military member and influential political leader might be. Gabbard is the sort of woman who would make of someone a favorite aunt, a close confidant, a trusted friend. If you wanted sane advice, she'd be your pick. She doesn't have the stunning entrepreneurial flair of Musk, Kennedy, or Ramaswamy, but her presence on the X-Men team would add to that excess of plasticity some true stability, the other personality metatrait. This is particularly important when the team in question will be tasked with so much administrative and managerial responsibility. It is great to have someone around like Vivek, for example, who spins off new ideas at a constant rate. But I'd bet on Gabbard to implement effectively and to pay attention to all the details, although Musk also excels at that, to walk the walk as well as talk the talk. She's a very difficult person not to admire, not to feel lesser than in her presence. She's solid, competent, straightforward, admirable, brave, patriotic, and tough. She'd be a truly thoughtful presence in the Trump X-Men team, which might otherwise tilt too hard toward the entrepreneurial and revolutionary. Slow down, gentlemen. Take some time and think. She has as well the emotional resilience not to panic, even under pressure, not to claim that the sky is falling and rush around madly and counterproductively merely for the show of work. It doesn't hurt as well that she is the epitome of feminine grace and attractiveness, Wonder Woman indeed, borrowing, if we can, from the DC world, the comic books, and not the city. I could certainly envision her as the first truly deserving female president of the United States.
So I think this points out one very important aspect to this entire election, and that is the kind of people that Donald Trump is surrounding himself with. He latched on to Tulsi Gabbard early on. Of course, Tulsi now has joined the Republican Party, which I didn't think would happen. But since she's done that, fine. I'm okay with that. I like independence, though. But in the real world, you can only accomplish more if you truly are a member of one of the two parties. And Donald Trump has surrounded himself with good people, very good people. Tulsi Gabbard, Robert Kennedy Jr., J.D. Vance. Look what this man is doing. He's setting the stage, not just for his own administration, he's setting the stage for a successful future afterward for this country. You've heard me speak a lot about Nate Silver. And let's backtrack a little bit. Nate Silver is the guy who founded 538, the big website that's almost like a constant polling website. And they do a lot of prognostications on 538. But these days, Nate is working for himself. He's a blogger. He's a pollster. And he's considered to be a data expert, a polling data expert, kind of a polling guru, if you will. And he has predicted that Donald Trump has a 10% greater chance than Kamala Harris of winning the Electoral College vote in Tuesday's election. God, Tuesday's tomorrow. Gee whiz. You'll have to excuse me, but this extra hour of sleep that I got over the weekend hasn't helped me at all. Anyhow, on his Risky Business podcast with co-host Maria Konnikova, which was posted back on Wednesday already, he revealed that he doesn't put too much weight in polls coming out during the last week of the campaign, alleging that many pollsters cheat to obtain their desired numbers. He prefaced his overall forecast saying, it's still approximately a 50-50 race, but there's the key word, approximately. He says it's basically 55-45 Trump or 54-45 with a small chance of a tie. Small chance. And this is, he's talking about the Electoral College. He says, it's been a little weird. I mean, look, it's gradually drifted to Trump over a fairly long period now. Two out of every 3 days, Harris has lost ground in the forecast since roughly early October. In his online forecast update published back on Friday, Silver wrote that the race had tightened in his model slightly. He says, good update for Harris with some strong polling for her in blue wall states. Not much sign of a last-minute swing in the race. So he thereby predicted that Trump has a 53.8% chance of winning the Electoral College to Harris, 45.8%, according to his modeling. But see, there again, this is modeling. And all too often, pollsters, yes, even Nate Silver, they go to the computer and let the computer do the modeling. I would argue that any pollster worth his salt would take a look at the current events, take a look at the things that are driving people to vote who otherwise would not be voting. And when you look at that, and you look at the breakdown of the demographics, the people who are actually getting out and voting, people voting for the first time, and there are a lot of people voting for the first time ever. And what's it about? The economy, stupid! So, Silver, in his podcast, he says, I don't think we're going to learn very much in this last week of the polling. In fact, I kind of trust pollsters less. Well, it proves how smart he is, at least. And even he leans to the left. Okay, he's a lefty. He says, every time a pollster says, every state is just plus one, every single state's a tie. No, you're herding. You're cheating. Herding involves polling firms adjusting their results to other pollsters, other pollsters' findings, so as not to be too little of an outlier, too much of an outlier, okay? And that's according to the American Association for Public Opinion Research, okay? That's what herding involves. And the danger is that all the firms then end up collectively biasing their results in a way that doesn't match reality among the voting public. How many years have you heard me harp on the fact that polls aren't even close more often than not after elections? You go and you finally vote, you get the election returns, it's conclusive who the winner is, and you realize, boy, those polls were way off. They always are, and that's why. No single pollster wants to end up finding out that he came across like a complete failure or an idiot. So this is why Silver asserted, and I'm going to say it in his words, quotes, your numbers aren't all going to come out at exactly 1-point leads when you're sampling 800 people over dozens of surveys. You're lying. You're putting your effing finger on the scale. I will not name names, but some pollsters are really bad about this. If a pollster never publishes any numbers that surprise you, then it has no value. From the mouth of Nate Silver. So with that preface, he noted that the presidential candidates appear to be within 1 percentage point or less of each other in the swing states, with Arizona being an outlier where Trump has taken an over 2-point lead. Now, Trump also appears to have similarly stronger leads in Georgia, where the Real Clear polling average has him up 2.6%. Imagine that. Georgia. Gee, I thought it was such a contentious state. Maybe not as much. And overall, Silver reiterated that the race is essentially a tie, and he encouraged everyone to get out and vote. Because Silver doesn't want Trump to win. Quite frankly. In 2020, Silver's model strongly favored Joe Biden to defeat Trump, giving the Democrat an 89% chance. 89% chance. However, in 2016, he also predicted Hillary would beat Trump, giving her a 71.4% chance to beat his 28.6%. You know, it's just... See, the thing is, here's a little truth bomb for you about Silver. Silver didn't think the Republicans would likely win the blue wall states of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, nor North Carolina or Florida. See, Nate Silver might be a brilliant pollster, but when it comes to the reality of where Americans stand now, how many Americans are suffering, struggling to make it paycheck to paycheck. How many Americans still can't find work? Because, well, you're overqualified, which means the employer is going to hire one of these illegal aliens in the country. You've got to shut the damn border down, and you need to shut it down now, and you need to leave it shut for at least 10 years so that we can finish the job of deporting people who don't belong here and legalizing the people who do belong here. Shut the damn border down. The problem I have with polls is that the results of polls, in most cases, vary depending on who's taking the poll. Who is the pollster? Now, there's Frank Luntz. You see him all the time on TV. He's been spending a lot of time on CNN. He doesn't seem to be the final word. CNN has their own pollster or prognosticator where these elections are concerned. And that guy, what the heck's his name? He's been saying that Trump is winning. Trump is leading everywhere. Frank Luntz saying pretty much the same thing. But the reason I find it interesting from Luntz is because Luntz leans left. And he makes no secret about it. And maybe that gives him more credibility. I don't know. But the problem with polls is by the time you read them, they're already outdated. Now, the information I'm going to pass on to you here is from Saturday. Okay. By the time you hear this, it's probably no longer accurate. But let's go along with this one just for grins, because it's interesting. They've got Trump leading Harris in every swing state by narrow, but, and this is the important part, expanding margins, according to a new poll. And this is the Atlas Intel poll. And this is a survey of likely American voters that's revealed that the Republican nominee, our guy Donald Trump, is favored to win in North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Now, the thing that I find interesting about this is we mentioned this about 3 or 4 days back. I guess the middle of last week, we mentioned this. And the information was the same. The only thing that's changed is there is an expanding margin now between Trump and Harris. But then again, Harris keeps shooting herself in the foot. I don't know that she's doing it alone. I think she has a team that's doing this. And they're just not very adept, obviously. Now, four of the states are polling outside the margin of error, which is interesting. In Arizona, Trump holds his widest margin with a 52.3% to 45.8% lead over Harris. In Nevada, Atlas Intel projects the former president has a 51.2% lead to 46% over the Veep. In North Carolina, where both candidates campaigned on Saturday, Trump holds a 50.5% lead to 47.1%. In Georgia, Trump's leading 50.1% to 47.6%. Several of the swing states are within the poll's 2-point margin of error. You got Michigan, 49.7% for Trump, 48.2% for Harris. In Pennsylvania, 49.6% for Trump, 47.8% for Harris. And the closest contest is Wisconsin. I think that cold air up there in Wisconsin damages their brains. I can't believe Wisconsin is that serious about Kamala Harris. But they've got Trump ahead there. 49.7% to 48.6%. That's a squeaker. But he's ahead. And they're also talking about how Trump is expected to take the popular vote. And that hasn't happened in, what, 40 years? Something like that? So Trump leads overall 49% to Harris's 47.2%, according to the poll. Now, let me make this very clear again. I don't care who's doing the poll, whether it's Nate Silver or 538 or this outfit, Atlas Intel. By the way, Atlas Intel is boasting in its poll that it was the most accurate in the 2020 election cycle, accurately predicting every swing state within the margin of error. Well, bully for them. It doesn't mean they're accurate this time. But here again, these are polls. And at election time, you have the poll numbers, and then you have the real numbers, which we may not get for a couple of weeks. And let's not forget, Jamie Raskin, the devil incarnate, is working right now to have Trump disqualified from taking the White House. You see, I think the thing you have to understand before you set foot into the voting booth is how evil the Democrats really are. They have every intention of preventing Donald Trump from taking the Resolute desk in the Oval Office even if he wins by a landslide. They have every intention of preventing Donald Trump from becoming our president. And they don't give a tinker's damn about our Constitution. Because they're going to actually make it appear as though they're using the Constitution to prevent Donald Trump from getting the White House. And you know why they want to do this? Because he's not a lawyer. Because he's not a politician. That's why they want to do this. And basically, they're I almost used a word I don't want to use on these podcasts. But basically, they're going to defecate all over our Constitution to make it happen, to make it so that the Democrats take the White House again, so that Kamala gets the White House. But it may backfire. If they succeed in keeping Donald Trump from getting into the White House, they may end up with J.D. Vance. Gee, that wouldn't be an entirely bad scenario now, would it? But you need to be aware of the nature of the evil that's lurking in the wings right now. Because tomorrow's election day. And if that election goes the way most people are saying it's going to go, Donald Trump may actually win the popular vote. He may win this election by a landslide. And then the violence in the streets all over the country will begin. The leftists will declare civil war. Then what do we do? Over the last couple of blogcasts here, I have painted kind of a dark picture for the near future in regards to this election. Because no matter which way this election goes, there's going to be a certain amount of violence across the land. But if Donald Trump wins, and if he wins, doesn't even matter. In fact, particularly if he wins by a small margin, the left is going to go absolutely insane. Well, I'm not the only one painting a dark picture for the future. How about, Megyn Kelly, former Fox News Channel superstar, who now has a very popular program on Sirius XM and also has a podcast. She paints an interesting picture as well.
If Trump wins, I actually think there's so much possibility in terms of what's good for America that I'm genuinely excited about it. But I'll start with the darkness before we get to the light. I do think that the Democrats will be in some sort of a nervous breakdown for the better part of 4 years. I don't think they will go quietly into the night with acceptance of the loss. I think we will have from November 5th to mid-January with them trying to figure out a way to stop him from actually being sworn in and taking the oath of office. I think it will revolve mostly around lawfare and trying to get declarations that he's an insurrectionist, something along those lines. I absolutely think that they will do all the things they accuse Trump of when it comes to these so-called fake electors and trying to get these electors to vote their conscience and avoid doing what their constituents sent them to Washington to do, which is vote for their, you know, Donald Trump. They'll try to get them to be so-called faithless electors to do what's right for the country, just to not enact the will of the people. And we'll have fights over this for weeks. Then when that fails and Trump takes office, they'll do what they did the last time and try to undermine him every step of the way. There'll be an impeachment effort within the first month. I think there will be additional attempts to take him down legally and those around him to the extent they can. If they maintain control over either body of Congress, there will be all sorts of investigations and, you know, they will stymie Trump's agenda, same as the Republicans would try to stymie hers. So that's the dark part. I also think where the hyperbole will go even next level. I mean, I don't even know how it could. They're calling Trump a Nazi, Goebbels. They're calling him a fascist, Mao, Stalin. I'm not sure how you can go next level on Trump. Like Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, Charles Manson. Let's see where they take it. But somehow they'll try to one-up themselves. And it'll be constant. And the media will be complicit. And it'll be a lot for us to take just to open the paper in the morning. It'll be hard to get any sort of a straight scoop on what Trump is doing or trying to do for the country, because the media will just so ideologically opposed to him. Okay, that's the darkness. But the light is what a lot of the Trump supporters right now are calling like the Marvel cast, like this team of rivals, or they're not all necessarily rivals, but just what an interesting panoply of generals he's bringing in, political generals. Elon Musk, who is promising he's going to find efficiencies in government. And I heard him speak about this out in California. He said, yes, we will be finding a lot of efficiencies, meaning people who are clogging the federal bureaucracy right now are going to get laid off, but humanely, in a way where they'll have 2 or 3 years of runway before they have to worry about getting another job, and the government trying to help them springboard into the private sector. And that means they're coming off of the government dime, and we're skinning down a federal government that's far too bloated. That's joyous to think about. Vivek Ramaswamy, who said he's on board to help with that, too.
And certainly from that standpoint, boy, we've got a lot to look forward to, because Donald Trump has assembled a dream team of people to really turn things around for this whole country and slim down our government. That is a very important thing. Did you know that the U.S. government is the single largest employer in this country? It's a fact. And we're paying for that. That's why our taxes are so damned high. Now, there are a lot of people on Trump's team already signed up whose names we have yet to hear. But I can assure you they're going to be great people, top quality people, because he's a good judge of character for the most part. I think he blew it with John Bolton, who's a likable guy. I like John Bolton's mustache, but I hate the fact that he's never seen a war he didn't love. And we can't have any more of that. But the one thing we need to be cautious of right now is how we all react to the reaction the leftists are going to employ when they lose this election by just a hair. To the Comedy Corner with Phil Palisol.
Etymology, let's talk about that while we're all here. Etymology, that is the study of words. You know that. Entomology, that is the study of bugs. Yeah, and I don't know what you call it when you study words that bug you, but that's what I do. Pretty much throughout today. And I don't know, man, I don't know if this is true of other languages, but the English language, man, we've got a lot of jacked up stupid words. They gotta go. Unbeknownst. You're gone. Unbeknownst. Nothing is ever beknownst. That's what bugs me about it. You hear people say it all the time. It was unbeknownst to me. I had no idea, but nobody ever calls money. I'm like, geez, dude. At what point did you beknow it? You had to beknow. We even knew something was going on. How could you not beknow? Extraordinary. Out. Extraordinary. More ordinary. Who wants that? You are extraordinary. Can I tell you that, man? You are ordinary plus. Extravaganza. So long. More vaganza. What am I supposed to do with all this vaganza I got laying about? Now I've got extravaganza. Deterred. Don't say it ever again. I read that the other day. He was going to go downtown, but he was deterred. I was like, got to be kidding me. Oh, my gosh. I have to go downtown. I wonder what that deterring process is all about. It's awful. Sometimes it's a single word like that bugs me, and then sometimes it's a whole string of words. I don't even understand how they ever came together, to tell you the truth. Dead in the water. Why is that different from just dead? Did you hear what happened to Joe? He died. Oh, gosh, no. Was he wet? Horrible if he was wet. It goes without saying, and not to mention, should just be followed by silence. But they're not. Every time somebody says not to mention, they just go right on mentioning something. It was the least I could do. Why would you say that ever? It was the least. That's what you chose to do. The least. Every time somebody says that to me, all I hear is, well, I really wanted to do nothing, but I couldn't get away with it. So I pushed myself, and I did the minimally acceptable amount. There's dozens of them. It goes on and on and on and on. By all means. You ever been hit with that one? Ugh, it's a favorite of a friend of mine. He comes over the other day and I said, can I get you some water? And he said, sure, by all means. I was like, oh, God, wait a minute. You want me to get you water by all means? You want it from a hose? Huh? You want it from a squirt gun? You want me to hand scoop it out of the aquarium? How do you want this water? Let me know when you've had enough.
Just get out there and make it a terrific day. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.